I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, we're back for episode 118 of Digital Divination.
Wait, John. I'm an employee of Wizards of the Coast, and the opinions I say here are mine and not theirs.
Well, you know, I'm glad you reminded me of that. You know, I was playing this game this evening. It was this thing out there with this new player's handbook and everything. And I had this guy from Wizards of the Coast there. Are you familiar with that stuff at all?
I am. I believe you got to experience some dungeons, but not yet dragons, in that yes. You're still first level characters.
Yes. I got to experience one dragon very, very intimately.
It's true. As though you were very just born from dragons.
Yes. Yes. So anyway, well, so thanks for rushing home after our game to get set up to play. Unfortunately, Jason has a very important guest today. I think it might be in-laws or something. He's got guests and he can't make it to our thing tonight. Well, as we had talked about last time, we were going to discuss building characters for Starfinder 2nd Edition playtest, because that's something we recently went through.
Right. And without Jason being here, I mean, you're getting the experience of two players who are building characters for Jason's campaign, the campaign Jason's running. So you get to hear that from us. Now, I know there's a lot of Jason Keeley fans who are probably at this point, you know, pulling out their earbuds going, darn it, I gotta wait for the next one to hear Jason again. Yeah. I'm sorry, but you're stuck with us.
Well, for those fans who are desperate to hear more of Jason, I just finished editing episode 141 of Intrepid Heroes, mm-hmm. and Jason, of course, is running that Intrepid Scoundrels arc that we're doing there.
Oh, that's right.
And it's I think it only has three more episodes till it's done, so it's pretty exciting.
That's a good story. I really like that.
I did too. And, you know, I always, because we're using some characters and things from the Star Wars universe in our actual mm-hmm. play, I always feel a little weird about that, because that's not something, when we're doing Starfinder or Pathfinder or whatever, that's not something we're usually, you know, we're not taking IP for something else and putting it into a homebrew setup. And so I always feel kind of weird about that.
Oh, that's interesting that you feel weird on that. I do feel a little bit weird, did feel a little bit weird, but in a different way. When we would play some of the West End Games Star Wars stuff back in the day, I remember my brother in particular was kind of frustrated. He's like, what is it even going to matter what we do when Luke and Leia and Darth Vader are in this universe doing their big thing? Right. Yeah. And there's if you're in existing IP, there's a really big concern that you're like, oh, well, we're kind of treading over the same ground that the, you know, the big budget movies are going to do better than around our kitchen table, et cetera. But I think Star Wars in particular, I don't feel that way anymore, because I think Star Wars in particular has expanded so much with shows like The Mandalorian and Andor and things like that, that really show the possibilities within the world and kind of the depths of the stories that can be told there. So one of the things about the Scum and Villainy game is that I really didn't feel any problem sort of trying to fit into the Star Wars world. It was really comfortable mm-hmm. because I've seen a lot of stories there. And in a way that wasn't particularly comfortable, you know, 20, 25, 30 years ago doing it, when you're kind of trying to shoehorn in on only the stories that you knew. So,
Yeah. And that's, I agree. I mean, we kind of went through the same thing. We would very intentionally build our home brews around IP like that. And so I was more, you know, for example, in this episode, we encounter an Ogdo Bogdo, right?
Okay.
Yeah. And so, you know, putting that in there, it's like, oh, that's a very specific thing from the IP that we have in there. So it's not like, anyway, so I, as I'm editing, I'm thinking about this stuff, the terminology, and you know, that's kind of how we did it, and it's a lot of fun. It almost makes me want to do the same thing with Starfinder, you know, with that rule set, kind of
drop in Star Wars IP.
As we're playing, oh, okay. Yeah, play through the Star Wars universe using Starfinder 2nd Edition rules.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah.
Similar to what we did with Scum and Villainy. Anyway, I digress. This is for those of you that are interested in more Jason Keeley. That episode will come out today, but that'll be in the past because this is being recorded for the future.
Right. You can go get it right now.
You can get it now. It's out already as we're speaking. So.
No, I can pull us back on topic here. Watch this. So one of the things that is great about creating a character for a new campaign for something like Starfinder as Starfinder 2nd Edition playtest is that Starfinder is sort of a big tent setting where if you've got some like, oh, here would be a cool character to do in Star Wars, you can probably make it fit. If you're like, oh, here's a cool right. kind of character I wanted to do in Star Trek, in Starship Troopers, in, you know, a lot of different science fiction properties, there's nothing wrong with saying, you know, I'd like a character that is kind of like this character in the IP. You know, I sure want to play a Lando Calrissian type character, or, oh, mm-hmm. I sure want to play a Data from, you know, Next Generation type character right. or something like that. Starfinder is a good place to try that. And the Pathfinder 2nd Edition rules that Starfinder is building on, it's a pretty good place to experiment. It's broad enough that you can find the types of rules that are going to reflect that, if not perfectly, at least conceptually.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that it's got a really nice blend of tech and magic, of hyper-realism, and far off fantasy, and yep. blending that together just gives you a lot of space to make some changes. Getting us back on track even more, what I'll mention is when we were building our character. So we've already started to record the Cosmic Birthday playtest adventure with Jason as the GM. We've done a couple episodes of that, and one of the things we all did is we got online and built our characters. And the thing I found really interesting is we used different tool sets, different right, online tools right. to do this. Now, what did you use when you were doing it?
I used HeroLab. HeroLab has the Starfinder 2nd Edition playtest option in it. I am a fairly heavy HeroLab user because in the Pathfinder Strength of Thousands game that I run, I have several of my players, including both my daughters, you know, they're happy to say what they want their character to be able to do when they go up a level, but all of the specific mechanics that go into advancing a character's level, they just don't have the patience for, or the kind of the rules understanding to understand all the fiddly bits. So I build all their characters in HeroLab. And so I'm used to using HeroLab for Pathfinder 2nd Edition. And when I realized HeroLab also has a Starfinder 2nd Edition playtest sort of option, I'm like, oh, well, I'm very familiar with this. So that's what I used. How about you? What did you find?
Well, this was actually thanks to Stephanie, your wife. I end up using the Starfinder Nexus, which is Demiplane has a tool for the Starfinder playtest on there. The URL for it is just app.demiplane.com/nexus/Starfinder2e. And it basically...
Look at the link in the comments below.
Oh, yeah, I'll put the link in the comments below. And yeah, it was really nice. It's free. You don't have to subscribe to it. You don't have to buy any books or anything because the playtest material is free. All the playtest options are in there. And it's a really nice point and click. I've never, ever used Demiplane at all for anything because I don't want to buy all the books again, primarily, you know, for Pathfinder and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So I was pleasantly surprised to see how easy it was to do that. Because initially, I was just doing it the old-fashioned way, right? I was just going to go through the book and build it out. And then Stephanie, your wife, So, oh yeah, I heard this thing here, and we got the link, and boom, boom, boom. It was not. So there are two parts to this, right? The first part is creating the character. The second part was getting it to Jason so that he could put it into Foundry, which is his virtual tabletop of choice. And the nice thing about Nexus is it allowed an export that he could import directly into Foundry.
At the risk of a pun here, is it the in the JSON output format?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, it's a JSON for Jason, and it uses something, I think it's called like Path Muncher or something. There's some other tool that allows it to bring stuff in. I used to use JSONs to import into Pathfinder Second Edition games for Foundry, but apparently that's not working properly now. Or it wasn't for a while. So
Foundry has a module, is that?
Right, but it is working for the Starfinder playtest stuff. So I thought that was really neat. Nice. What about, how did you get your stuff to Jason?
Oh, this is Oakshot. What I did is I exported my character from Hero Lab as a PDF, and I emailed the PDF to Jason, and I'm like, here you go. Right. And apparently first-level characters are easy enough that he could just look over my numbers and then drop them in. And it was, as far as I can tell, it's almost entirely right. When we actually got to playing, my character, who is an Aslanti human, uses an Aslanti weapon, which is an uncommon weapon. But I can use it because of my, because of my heritage. And Foundry set it to be untrained when I used it.
Oh, yeah,
my number is only plus 2, not plus 5. But it was a matter of me saying, I think I'm supposed to be trained in this. And Jason on his end in Foundry was just, open, click, click, click. Okay, now I'm trained in it. I mean, I was frankly amazed that it didn't need to be. I didn't have to have some sort of, awkward workaround where I was always adding plus 3 to it or whatever. No, he just, made it a trained thing. And then, to his credit, showed me how you'd do it. Not right then, right? Because we were in the middle of using it. But later, when I was opening up some other window for something, he's like, oh, hey, while you're here, this is how you'd make yourself trained in a thing. I'm like, oh, wow. See one, do one, teach one, I think is the...
Yes. I like Foundry quite a bit, and getting back to character building, another thing that you can do is you can just build the character from scratch in Foundry. There is a Starfinder playtest module for the Pathfinder Foundry, whatever it is, I don't know what you call it, download or whatever they have, and there's a compendium. And you can just drag and drop onto a character sheet all the Starfinder playtest stuff as well.
Do you know, is that free if you've got Foundry?
Yes. Yes, I believe that is. Yeah. I think that's on Paizo. I think Paizo is making all the playtest material available free and getting it out to folks. Now, I don't know if they did the conversion or there's a group for Foundry that has done a lot of the second edition modules and stuff. Now Paizo's actually paying to get a lot of those done. In fact, I think, Jason's using, I think, the Cosmic Birthday that Paizo created, I think, for Foundry. I don't think that's...
Oh, it's in there because Paizo made it.
I think Paizo, that's part of what they did for the playtest.
Well, and sometimes a third party they're doing this. I know that Andrew White at Paizo, who is just an absolute, wonderful gentleman. I really like Andrew White quite a lot. I know that he spends a lot of, he's very invested in making the Foundry work for the things that Paizo does. And that's great. Mm-hmm. That's great to see. Wouldn't surprise me if this is a thing that he's invested in just because bringing people into Foundry to play Paizo's things is just something that is sort of, personally important to him. There was some talk when we were making characters, let me back up. When we were making characters for a campaign that ended up not launching, you asked us to use a website called Hephaistos. And there was some question about, does Hephaistos do the Pathfinder second edition playtest rules? And I never got to the bottom of that. Do you know if anybody that made their characters used that?
Nobody did. And at the time, it wasn't set up. But shortly afterwards, they came up with a alpha preview for the playtest.
And oh, so now you can go there too to make one.
Yes. So it's sfs2efastios.online. And I'll put that in the comments as well.
Comments below.
And yeah. And again, now what I've read about that, I think it was on one of the Starfinder Reddits, is that they're not everything was fully functional in there, but it was pretty close. It was pretty close. There's something that was limited. Oh, and this one talks about that you can print the character sheet and download a PathMuncher compatible JSON file. And then, of course, you can take that and upload that into Foundry. So,
and you could send your JSON to JSON.
Yes, yes. And so...
Don't everybody flood JSON with your JSONs. That's just a pun. Please don't.
Yes. But it's, you know, having that format, you know, having a tool to build your character, being able to put it in a format that then your GM can just upload it to their VTT, that's nice. That's very convenient.
Yeah, I think that the more VTTs get used and the more, whether they're Foundry or the VTT that Wizards of the Coast has been showing, or the more VTTs get used, the more the utility of character generating programs is how well they interface with those VTTs. And so the fact that these can plug into Foundry for our use in this case is pretty valuable. Did anybody use anything other than those options we've mentioned so far to make their characters? Do you know? I don't know how Mark or Scott made their characters.
Well, Scott has HeroLab.
Okay.
Yeah.
But he also has a lot of Foundry knowledge. And so he might have been, I don't know if he made his directly in Foundry, which is a thing you can do.
Yeah. The way he was talking, he might have done that. Yeah. I don't know about Mark. Yeah. I don't know. And Tim, I think, used the Nexus, the Demiplane one as well.
Okay. Yeah, I think that the only reason Steph found that option, the Nexus option, is because we'd been talking for many days about how we were going to build the character. And I assumed that I would just eventually get around to building it once she told me kind of what she wanted and why and how. And we just never connected on that. You know, family, other stuff got in the way and, you know, life got in the way. And it's because I was already ready to record up here. And she was downstairs and was like, you know what? She's like, I'm just going to figure this out. And
yeah,
she is exceptionally competent. And it was not a surprise to me that she found a solution that ended up working very well. But the question I have for all these, and maybe this is a question that we could find out with a little bit of research or not, the playtest rules are already getting errata.
Right.
And that's to be expected with any playtest. They're like, well, we're testing these rules. Okay, how about we test them seems like we have to tweak them this way. Seems like we have to tweak them this other way. How many of these builders keep up with the errata that they're producing on something like a timely fashion? Because you can see if somebody who runs one of these character builders goes through all the sort of the engineering effort to make sure that it works, then they could just move on to other things, right? I don't know. I can see that they could take the attitude of, look, you can do it how it is in the soft cover book, and that's good enough. And, you know, no, we're not going to be spending resources to continually update that. We're going to continually update for, you know, more significant things, maybe. But then some of them do. The people who have, we put this in and it's kind of, you know, something we want to keep abreast of all the changes that Paizo's making to the playtest rules, they might sort of keep it updated. I don't know how each of these are handling that or if they are.
I don't know either. And I haven't read up enough to see the state of that. Now, Foundry, a lot of the things on Foundry are done by the community. And that's if some of the modules, I don't know the module that Jason's using where it was created. I think it was at Paizo. And so it may be that a community-based one or Paizo-based one maybe gets going more quickly versus a commercial one. Like HeroLab Online, I was actually surprised they had this Starfinder stuff, playtest stuff in there because they've been a little bit slower for changes in the past. Mm-hmm. Hephaestos was a little bit slow getting up to speed, but for the Pathfinder second edition stuff, I think, I'm sorry, for the Starfinder stuff before, every time they've had an update, from a new book or anything. They were pretty quick to get it in there. So that's just my general impression. I actually don't know these things, but I'm just putting it all on our GM that he'll adjust Foundry to reflect all the errata. So
all the change to the extent they apply to us. Yeah. Yeah, I think that Scott had one of the weapons his operative uses had a change. I don't think that anything that my Mystic uses has had a change. One of the things that the listeners will hear as far as building these characters and building the party is that we realize there are six of us and six classes in the playtest. So we each took exactly one of them, right? And so even though we may have some differences or overlap in the species that we're playing, the classes that we're playing are all different. And so I feel real ownership of the Mystic since that's the one that I'm doing.
Yeah, and I am doing a Witch Warper, which I don't play a lot of casters, so I think it's pretty fun for me. The interesting thing I'll say is, like, with Scott's operative, is like he's like saying all the stuff he can do and what he's doing. It's like, this is all first level, and this is like so different than first edition Starfinder. I'm really excited about the playtest. So,
yeah, I think that there is. If this is the case with Pathfinder 2nd edition, I think, is that there's still a ton of people that still play Pathfinder 1st edition. There are some people that play both. I was playing a Pathfinder 1st edition game yesterday, right? Yeah. So I still play both. But I think that there are a lot of people who sort of shed their Pathfinder 1st edition knowledge in order to embrace Pathfinder 2nd edition because they realize thinking things are going to work in 2nd edition like they did in 1st edition, it doesn't lead to any kind of happiness, right? There's nothing but grief lies down that road. Yeah. And so I think that the same is true with Starfinder. And I want to tell Scott, you know, hey, things can work awesome in Pathfinder first or Starfinder first edition that might not work that way in the Starfinder second edition. You have to kind of feel that out, right? And Scott's one of those people who knows the rules very well, and so he can he can kind of take a look between the two and realize kind of what works and what won't. But it takes that kind of look to be like, oh, well, here's the things that a Mystic does well in first edition. I'm like, I'm going to assume that it doesn't do any of those. Let me instead see what it does in second edition. And a good example of that is as far as the healing spells go, Mystics can do, you know, the Mystic Cure, and they've got all kinds of healing they can do. And well, the healing that a Mystic does works differently, you know, the vitality network that they create and the pool of healing they have, it's a new mechanic and it works differently. And so even though they did well at healing before, they do well at healing now, the mechanism is entirely different. And that's required a closer look that frankly surprised me. At how close a look that required.
Yeah, I was actually thinking my Witch Warper would be a bit more complicated because it's kind of rolled in the precog in there. And so I'm using the precog specialization in there because I remember when you were playing the precog in our Horizons of the Vast game, I thought, oh man, that sounds so cool. You know? So I decided I wanted to roll that part of it. And it is less complicated than I thought it would be. So We'll see as we advance and go forward.
And that's one of the things that I've observed about Pathfinder 2nd edition as my players in Strength of Thousands are just about to enter book 4 of 6 and in Fist of the Ruby Phoenix that you're running where we start at a high level and we're about to go into book 2 of 3 at the higher level is Pathfinder 2nd edition presents at the higher level you go. It's an almost exponential multiplicity of options, right?
Right.
You've got so many different abilities that you just forget that you even have so many abilities. And nobody wants to play a first level character that stays at first level forever.
Right.
But there's something to be said for, oh, well, this is, we kind of get it and it's simple and we get to be this for a long time. Okay, second level, okay, we've expanded. Let's play long enough to get used to this. Versus the kinds of players who are like, you know, we're going to start at 11th and every other session we're going to advance a level and let's go. that can get a little bit difficult.
You know, one of the things I was thinking of, do you remember when the Pathfinder 2nd edition playtest came out?
Oh, yeah, goodness, do I? Yes. Yeah, that book where it was the specific the Doomsday Dawn series of adventures that came out, which was unlike any other series of adventures because they expected you to swap your characters kind of out and around. Mm-hmm. That was the, I was remembering just the other day that the first, I think it was the very first day I started at Paizo way back in 2017.
Yeah.
How excited Eric Mona was to kind of take us into the conference room and say, I got to show you guys some art that just came in. Oh, by the way, hey, big secret. We're working on Pathfinder 2nd edition, but let's see some of this cool art that just came in for this. It was a very exciting time to be there. But yes, I did Doomsday Dawn. I did some of the work on that. I did some of the internal testing in that, some of the internal playing.
Now, so, you may not recall this, but I seem to remember that there was a big heavy lift for people to develop their characters for the 2nd edition playtest for Pathfinder. That mm-hmm. that was one of the big complaints, is kind of time consuming, complicated, things like that. And I quite frankly find this transition to the 2nd edition, Starfinder 2nd edition playtest, to be so much simpler than everything I heard some 7 years, or it wasn't even 7 years
oh.
ago.
Oh,
6 years ago.
Yeah, because of the number of tools that are out there
right.
to help you do it. We've already mm-hmm. talked about four of them, right?
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. And I just think that's such a stark contrast to what it was before there. And the fact that Paizo has been kind of out ahead of this by getting the tools out early, getting what's needed out to people, build tools and stuff to facilitate that, that whole issue, I think, has become a nothing burger, right? It's not, that hasn't reared up at all. It's, which I think is awesome.
Yeah, I think that's good. I think that it's set up to continue throughout the playtest. And I feel like the same way that the rules are kind of in flux because the, you know, Paizo wants to see how they go, how the rules test and the feedback that they get in order to make the final version of Starfinder 2nd edition. I feel like a lot of these people and these companies that are doing the sort of build programs for this, the Hero Lab and the Hephaestus and the Nexus and all that, are embracing the Starfinder 2nd edition playtest because it lets them lay the groundwork to more easily roll out the Starfinder 2nd edition version, mm-hmm. which will last for, you know, who knows how long, right? But a long time. That'll be a good way for them to try to grab the players using their program to build the stuff.
Yeah, definitely not wasted effort on their part.
Right, you know, right.
So, very good. Well, anyway, I think this is great. It's been a great discussion of some of the tools and processes that we went through. As we continue to advance and level, I think those are things that we can definitely talk about as well.
Yeah, and that's and we kind of won't be able to not talk about it on future shows. We're both players and Jason is our GM.
Yeah,
so it's a kind of thing that listeners will keep hearing, you know, Ron talking about his Mystic again and John talking about his Witchwarper again as we go or not. I don't have a sense of how lethal this adventure is. We might have to rebuild characters at any point.
Yeah. I was thinking it seems a little bit of a challenge. Like we ran into something. There was a different dynamic for armor for a particular creature. And I think we were pretty close. We could add a TPK there. It was dangerous.
I think it was touch and go. I think it was one of those situations where I'm like, look, we're first level. We can't do everything. Maybe now is the time to leave.
Yes.
And just before I was thinking about, you know, how am I going to formulate the polite suggestion that we just get the heck out of here before the tide. And then the tide kind of turned in just the course of even a part of a round. And I'm like, well, maybe we'll be able to pull this out.
And a lot of that is because we didn't know, right? This thing is so impossible to defeat. We didn't know why. We didn't know how our progress was going because, you know, again, the mechanics, the system, it's new for us, right? We're not, we don't know what we're up against. We didn't know what's going on.
I mean, which is part of the joy in playing what we're playing, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's what's nice about something brand new like this. You know, like the game today, right? Even though, you know, we've been working on characters and stuff, we kind of went back in time to a very old adventure from what book is that from? I know it's from a book.
The adventure that it's out of Quests of the Infinite Staircase.
Yes, that's right. But it's like we're back and we have no idea what we're facing, how dangerous it is, how we're going to fare. You know, right, it's right. To be newbies all over again, you know, with the new system is really kind of cool.
Yeah, it's an age of new adventurers in new adventures. So that's that's been kind of fun these last few weeks.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up today. I know you have some additional work to do and I got some stuff to do as well.
You got a busy week ahead of you. You were saying, yep.
I know. Not as busy as other people. That's the thing that gets me is this is my busy, which is like not even average for a lot of other, like Mark is like busy all the time. So I feel bad whenever I talk about being busy. Cause I know he's super busy.
Well, and I'm a little bit the same way. I'm like, oh, you know, woe is me. I got to do some work on a weekend where I'm writing cool adventures and designing neat rules. I mean, that's for a lot of people. I feel like I really need to be wouldn't work in air quotes.
I know.
It's got to get done.
It's time. Got to do it. Well, I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this has been Digital Divination.